Hello, my name is Katie Winkler, and I've written I'm not sure what to call it, but its title is Campus, a novel that wants to be a musical. But it's not a novel. I mean, it sort of is, but I've decided that it's so strange and weird that it's never going to get published. I wouldn't know how to publish it as a book. So I've decided to make it what I call a poddle. A podcasted, serialized novel. It's a social satire about higher education in the South. Kind of inspired by my own life, but definitely not my own life. You'll see why as we start the novel. Part 1. The Normal World. I think of defining the parameters of the normal world as creating the story sandbox. Once you establish where the outer edges of the sandbox are located, you have free rein to play within those boundaries pretty much as you wish. Steve Cooden from Beating Broadway, How to Create Stories for Musicals That Get Standing Ovations. Campus. A Novel That Wants to Be a Musical by Katie Winkler. Chapter 1. I am the narrator. But enough about me. Much more important is that I'm here to tell you the story of Melody. It's not totally about Melody. It's only partly about her, and she is important, but never mind, more about that later. When our story begins, we see Melody, a teacher, an English teacher, as she was about to embark on her first job. Wide-eyed, naive, believing that every student can and will learn, that they want to learn, that every word out of her lips will be like honey on their tongues, that they will come to her prepared for the higher levels of Bloom's taxonomy, ready to analyze and synthesize, ready to create. Melody was her name. And she believed. Foolish girl. No, I'm not being too harsh. I'm only speaking the truth that I know because I have lived it right along beside her. But I am the narrator. Enough about me. So, that beautiful mountain morning, she stepped on the stage of her educating life, onto the campus. You need to know that this girl, this young woman, was not beautiful. She was not unattractive. She was who she was and content to be so. Normal height, as far as gnomes go. With medium-length brown hair streaked with blonde from the Appalachian sun, and wavy. She was not short or tall, not thin, not fat for a gnome. She was the first in her family to finish college, and because of what her teachers had done for her, she wanted to give back to them, and there she was, standing at the edge of the quad, ready to give, ready to teach. She had come early this late summer day, before anyone else. The sun just peeping over the hills of the campus, she walked again onto the enchanted campus, walking across the green grass of the quad, surrounded by poplars, oaks, and cedars. She had always known she belonged here, could feel it. Then, passing by the legendary oak that had stood in that spot for 500 years, she saw him, a white squirrel, with the pale gray stripe running down his spine and gray points on his tiny ears. He scampered up the trunk, then stopped, splaying his body against the dark wood. She stood as still as she could and watched him. He didn't move for almost a minute before squeaking and scampering on up into the canopy. It was a sign, thought Melody. Perhaps it was. Now in the early morning, before the late summer day turned too warm, she walked around the campus. It was not a residential campus, but a community college for the special residents of this isolated Carolina mountain town. They had warned her, I had warned her, that it was a strange place, but she didn't care. She loved it already. She passed by the oak and could picture the secret pride of the mountains, the young mountain men and women, the elves and dwarves and boojums and moon-faced people gathering to learn together in this special place. She thought as she walked on about the campus that it was like Brigadoon, magically appearing like it did that day she was visiting campuses with her parents. She and her mother stood in the center of the quad, right by that mighty oak, and turned around 360 degrees, their mouths hanging open, taking in the student center, the library, the little rose garden. Yes, this school had a rose garden. Students volunteered to prune the bushes and pull the dead rose heads off the stems and mulch and weed and water. She wanted to be a student here, wanted to do that. Her mother wanted her to do it too. She had always wanted to go to school, but she was a gnome and gnomes didn't go to school. They weren't to work in the toy factory and dog hobble. Whittling G-Haul whimmy-diddles and flipper-dingers, assembling corn husk dolls and testing dancing limberjacks, making the little wooden men dance on their paddles, clicking and clacking. They had walked through the quiet library, empty except for one or two students flipping the pages of old musty books and two scribes who sat in the back dipping their quills in thick black ink, drawing the letters. Hunched over their ornately carved wooden desk, the scribes didn't look up when Melody and her family passed by with the other potential students and their families. They just dipped and drew, looping the ink, forming the letters in one fluid motion. It was art. But they were frowning and grunting, mumbling to themselves. Occasionally, one would stroke his long beard. Melody held her hand out as she passed and brushed one of their red robes. The scribe looked up with a snarl. Watch where you're going, it said. Melody pulled her hand back. I'm so sorry, she said. The scribe pulled the robe back into place with his gnarled hand. It said. And Melody scampered after her mother. It was Father in the end who forbade her from going to campus. He said she had to go to a school in the real world. She would go to the university in Asheville, or she wouldn't go at all. Her father thought Asheville was the New York of Appalachia, where his girl would receive a proper education and get a real job. She would be an accountant. She was forced to disappoint him. Had no head for numbers. Thought he knew that, but he didn't. So he was a bit surprised when his little girl became a teacher. An English teacher. But her father loved her and thought the world would always need English teachers. People would always need to know how to write and communicate, wouldn't they? They don't think they need to, but they do. I'm sorry, that was me, the narrator, interrupting. Sorry. Back to the story. I know how to compromise, he said. To please her father, he really was very sweet, despite his gnomish grumbling. She went to UNC Asheville and then to Western Carolina for her master's. Now on this summer day, only 3 short months after graduating with her master's in English education, she was back here on campus, soon to teach her first class. She was excited and terrified. I remember that. I remember what that was like. She stood again in the center of the quad and made her 360-degree turn right next to the oak where she and her mother stood 5 years before the plague that took her away from them. Her father couldn't bear the loss and spent his days deep in the rhododendron grove at the foot of Bear Walla Mountain in the hut they had built together and where they had raised their only child. Melody tried to get him to come with her for Club Rush Registration Advising Day, but he just shook his head. "I'm sorry, Sugar. I just can't." She understood, but it would have been good if he would have been there to hold her hand. She faced the main building, graced with the name of the first great philanthropist of the region who inherited and then donated the land, Mrs. Josephine Campbell Smith. Neo-Georgian, red brick with large windows, white accents and columns. It had been the original classroom building before the Capital Campaign, when the venerable brick edifice was repurposed to house administration. Quite a sight to behold. Other buildings around the quad were less impressive. They were, she had been told, of the high modernism style. But she had researched, as was her way, and found that the style of the huge modern buildings made of concrete and awkward shapes were better called brutalist buildings. I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised, though. I'm not surprised at all. Melody left the quad and found a bench that was dedicated by Mr. and Mrs. Timothy Anderson in memory of their beloved son, Jonathan, who loved teaching and loved his students. How sweet, she thought. She sat and opened up her breakfast sandwich she picked up on her way this morning. She had been told that the cafeteria was closed to college students now, since there had been a little trouble between the early college high school students and the traditional college-age students. Seems it involved food, especially Jell-O and whipped cream and cookies and mustard. She wasn't very clear on what happened, but it seems it was quite messy, and the facilities coordinator had said, "If you kids can't behave yourselves, then we're just shutting the damn place down." And that's what he did. But then he found out that it was against the law for the high school kids to go without a lunchroom. So now high school kids can go eat there, but not faculty, staff, or college students. Okay, this is not Melody thinking. This is me, the narrator, okay? And I guess you figured out that even though this isn't supposed to be about me, it is. And you also have no doubt figured out that I am a teacher here at this college as well. And that I am perhaps a bit burnt out. And hell yeah, I am. And this whole lunchroom unfairness really pisses me off, okay? Okay. Got that off my chest. But Melody doesn't care about all of these things. She is still new, still fresh, not jaded like this old teacher. Okay, I'm not that old, only 60, but I feel old. This place has made me old in spirit. Anyway, I saw Melody that day walking around the campus. I was there early too because I had to get some papers ready for registration. She seemed so happy, so full of purpose. I wondered how long it would last. But then again, I'm the narrator. Enough about me.